So last weekend, we went to see the new Tom Hanks movie, Captain Phillips, which I highly recommend. It's based on the true story of what happened in April of 2009 when four Somali pirates take control of the freighter, the Maersk, Alabama. It's a dramatic story, not for the faint of heart, but if you like an exciting movie, I recommend it. Yet early on, I had to laugh as I watched this 18-foot open fishing boat with a little 50-horsepower engine on the back trying to chase down this 508-foot container ship. I mean, surely this is a fool's errand. And yet, on the second attempt, those four pirates board the ship and take over the crew of about 21. It's a sign of their desperation that such a thing would even be attempted. I mean, these pirates, as you'll see, are not rich thieves, but poor fishermen who have run out of fish. At one point, Captain Phillips asks the head pirate, he said, "Surely there's something to do between fishing and becoming a pirate." And he said to him, "Maybe in America. Maybe in America." So I thought about it. This movie became a metaphor for our search for happiness, whether in wealth or relationship or a job, a house, kids, you name it. And even though for a time it seems like, you know, our little ego has gotten on the big ship, we've gotten what I want, what we wanted, sooner or later, life defeats us. Life always wins, and we finally always lose. Whether it's wealth, or relationships, or a job, or house, or children, one day, maybe tomorrow, maybe 50 years from now, it will all turn to dust like the antebellum South and be gone with the wind. Those pirates didn't have long to wait for that to happen to them, because it turns out the United States Navy was determined to save Captain Phillips. But why is it that we don't win? Why is it that those great things keep being taken from us? Well, we knew thousands of years ago, Heraclitus told us, no one can ever step in the same river twice. Which means his point is everything changes. Everything is impermanent. Everything is passing away. Or as one of my favorite hymns, we sang it, the choir sang it yesterday at the funeral, time like an ever-rolling stream bears all our years away. But the paradox is this, right? There are moments in life of such exquisite happiness. Some are huge. A child is born. A relationship is formed. A purpose is fulfilled, and others are quite small, but just as exquisite. You know, a dinner with friends, singing with a granddaughter who acts out the verses, reading a good book. Life is filled with so many joys, yet the moment we try to hold on to them and keep them here, to nail them down, to make them last, the moment we do that, suffering arises. Think about the mother who goes into a depression when her little five-year-old goes off for that first day of kindergarten and life is forever changed. Or the father whose heart breaks when his son graduates from college and moves 2,000 miles away to Colorado. Jesus, I think, is telling us his parable today about how to live in a world where everything changes, where everything passes away. How do you live in such a world? Well, Luke says, well, it's all about prayer. But that word has been ruined for me. Maybe not for you, but for me, prayer, when I hear people use it, they normally mean prayer is a superficial monologue in which we whine to God to circumvent the physical laws of the universe to suit me, so I don't have to suffer. That's sort of what most people mean by prayer. And this kind of this image of prayer then teaches us this prayer, you know, is no different than just driving into the drive-thru and talking into the box and ordering a Big Mac and fries. You know, just here's what I want, and I'm going to put it on the credit card, and you can get me later for that. Serious people, and you're serious people because you're in church on Sunday morning, you know, we're right to run away from such egocentric prayer in which we try to enlist God in the project to control the future and to make us happy. Some of us in here can remember Janis Joplin singing that wonderful prayer, "Oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz," right? I have a friend who says, you know, that actually is a perfectly good prayer as long as it's the opening gambit in a long conversation with God that ends up with me being content with my Chevrolet. But by itself, it's not much of a prayer. So some people think the lesson to be learned, and you can get it out of the gospel reading, is that what Jesus is saying, you've got to let God know what you want and never give up demanding it. Which would mean he's really telling us to develop stubborn willfulness. But all of us know there's nothing attractive about a three-year-old, you know, pitching a fit, as we say in the South, in order to get candy instead of having to eat their vegetables. There's nothing to be gained by that. And that is not what Jesus is doing here. He's not telling us how to have a long tantrum to get what we want so we can manipulate the divine. Because three verses before the gospel I just read, he says, those who try to make their life secure will lose it. Those who try to make their life secure will lose it. But those who lose their life, those who do not try to make their life secure, will keep it. He's telling us that prayer, real prayer, is the practice of living with our hearts open to God moment by moment, trusting God to be with us and to heal us in God's time and in God's way. So this kind of prayer is not just a thought randomly tossed off by the ego to God, but it's really a change in our operating system from being ego-based to God-based. And it made me think about, and I'm not sure why, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which of course now are 12 steps for many groups that meet for healing. But listen to the first three and see if they don't fit this widow. Number one, she admitted she was powerless, that her life had become unmanageable. Step two, she came to believe that a power greater than herself could restore her to sanity. Step three, she made a decision to turn her will and her life over to the care of God. Of course, the only reason anyone would ever do such a thing, to turn over our will and our life to the care of God, is if we believe God is already there for us, holding us, caring for us, reaching into our lives, coming to set us free. Once we accept that God has a passion for us, that's the beginning of true prayer. It starts with the recognition that without God, the ego will continue to get in small fishing boats and try to take over enormous container ships or whatever crazy schemes we come up with that will end in exactly the same way it ended for the Somali pirates. So I think we're being called to pay attention to our inner life, to pay attention to our inner life, to see that gaping hole we all have in our soul. I like the image of, instead of the words original sin, which leave a bad taste in our mouth, I prefer the words original wound. We all have an original wound in us. And if you thought you were the only one in the world that had it, rest assured, you're not. You know, we have this wound, but then we just try to stay so busy to plug it up or fix it or hide it or something. Or I thought religion was there to heal the wound and then all would be right with the world. But it occurs to me after trying that for a number of years that God does not have any interest in healing that wound in the way we think about healing. Instead of closing the wound, God allows the wound to stay open because it's God's point of access in our lives. The ego views that wound like a sailor views a hole in the hull. You know, it's an existential threat which must be fixed at all costs. Jesus sees that inner wound as the pearl of great price, as the treasure buried in the field, is that which we must pay attention to. Because that's where God is speaking to us, rather than running from it. And that's why the image of Jesus on the cross is so central to our faith, while we keep coming back to it, while we are haunted by the cross. It's the image of God in our wound. And that inner wound can wake us up to God already with us. And of course, we remember that famous quote I keep mentioning from Richard Rohr. If we do not transform our pain, we will transmit it. Only God knows how to transform pain. So faith is the willingness to trust God to do this. Not to heal the wound, but to transform the pain. Prayer becomes the practice of faith, living in silent awareness. While God works in the cave of our hearts. Which brings me to the 11th step of the 12 steps. This is probably less familiar to us. The 11th step reads, through prayer and meditation, we seek to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. So this, I think, is what we're being called to persist in, living moment by moment in that alert presence surrendered to God's kingdom, which has come among us. At the end of the movie, Captain Phillips, all he can do is wait on the Navy SEALs. But we wait on a crucified and risen Lord who's in the darkness with us, who manifests His power and His presence and His passion of God. For each of us. Amen.